Newfoundland. People with courage and foresight have come to mind this rich land for hundreds of years. Now, the next chapter in Newfoundland's mining history is being written, and it may prove to be the richest chapter yet. To learn more, find us online at newfoundgold.ca.
Welcome back to Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovic. Joining me today is Scott Craig. He's the editor of the Silver Independent and author of Bonds of Empire. Scott, how are you today?
Good, Tom. Thanks for having me on your program.
Excellent to have you. You have a background as a historian, and I was wondering how this real deep dive that you've taken into history, how this has informed and really got you down into investing in silver.
Yeah, that's a great question. So as a historian, I think one of the things that I bring to the table that's a little bit different is this sort of long-term perspective on the history of money. So what we historians do is we typically identify a problem. Sometimes that problem can be in the present, like the condition of our current fiat monetary system. And then we look back at the past and try to find out, well, how did other nations or empires or societies fix that problem? So what I would say is that, for example, the current fiat monetary system based on the US dollar is not the first fiat monetary system in the world. There have been obviously many others. But what I would say is that when we look back at the past, we can see that almost universally what other nations, empires, and societies have done is when those systems collapse, they return to sound money, that is to say gold and silver.
Absolutely. So, Scott, as you're talking about that, another point that I found very interesting that you've talked about in the past was that really kind of starting to make a deep dive into silver and gold is kind of a gateway to understanding more about the world. So could you give us an example of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that we need to be aware of here is an understanding of sound money is not something that's necessarily taught in the school system. So if you take an economics class or a history class, you're probably not going to get a lot of information about the history of gold and silver used as money. And the reason for that is largely because that we're currently under this fiat, paper, or digital monetary system. So much of the scholarship that's produced, much of the education that we receive in school is bent or directed towards the study of the fiat system. So there's maybe perhaps a little bit of a confirmation bias in the education system towards the fiat monetary system. So this would actually partly explain the reason, I think, why those scholars, those historians, economists and people who study the markets who adhere to the Austrian School of Economics, and typically people who study the Austrian School of Economics favor precious metals, that is gold and silver, as money. They've had to adopt over the past, you know, several decades kind of this siege mentality to defend their intellectual position on the precious metals. So this is all to suggest that this is something that's rather unknown in the general population. It's understudied, certainly, which is why I think at least one reason that we should shine some light on the subject, because having an understanding of gold and silver is really to have an understanding of how monetary systems have worked for, I would say, 90 to 95% of human history. Because if you look at the history of money, one of the things that you'll find is that, especially in the West, the use of fiat paper money is actually an anomaly. It's something that doesn't really happen too often. And when it does happen, it usually ends very badly. So what a study of precious metals like silver can do for the individual is to essentially teach them that there is a pathway to escape the fiat paper money system, right? That is to say that while governments would like to control the monetary system through things like legal tender laws, the individual also has the ability to choose what they want to use as money. And with so much money printing going on by the US government and other governments around the world, it would make sense that I think more and more people are going to gravitate towards that kind of understanding.
And as you're speaking about education, Scott, you do a great job on your website, The Silver Independent, that I mentioned at the top there, really trying to highlight, you have a great educational section that kind of gives people the basis behind why gold and silver are real money and hard money, as they're called. And you also post a lot of articles really trying to highlight the value in the precious metals. One of the other interesting stories that you told recently was the story about Alexander Delmar. He basically wrote the book on the history of precious metals, and he wrote a really interesting piece and a cool illustration that was basically showing the bubble of, let's say, a paper monetary system. So what are the primary beneficiaries of the expansion of these types of bubbles?
Right. So I'll just begin with a brief explanation of who Alexander Delmar is, because he's a rather unknown figure in the history of economics and sound money. And that's really unfortunate, because I would liken him to being essentially the Ludwig von Mises of America in the 19th century. And so that sounds like a pretty bold statement. But when you realize that this is someone who wrote over 10 books on the subject of money, which, you know, when you write 10 books, that makes you an expert, right? A prolific author on the study of money. We should definitely know a lot more about Alexander Delmar. So Alexander Delmar, he is someone that studied money from a very young age. He actually went to the Madrid School of Mines, where he was educated in mining. He wrote several books on the subject of the precious metals. And during the 1860s, when the American Civil War broke out, one of the things that happened was that the government went off the sound money standard. That is to say that they adopted paper money, which was at the time called the greenback. And so Alexander Delmar realized when the government went off of sound money that this would be inflationary, right? That as the government produced more and more paper money to finance the war effort, that would mean that the savings in paper of those laborers living in the Union at the time was going to deteriorate rather rapidly. And so he didn't sit idly by while this happened. You know, he understood this sort of arcane knowledge of monetary history, and he actually wrote this book called The Great Paper Bubble or The Coming Financial Explosion in order to warn other Americans, hey, your money is going to be worth less, not worthless, but worth less in the future as this monetary inflation continues. And so in the book is this fantastic image, right, that you just described so well, of someone blowing this bubble, right? And the bubble represents the beneficiaries of the process of inflation. And so we know that the people that benefit from that process are, one, people that have, you know, hard physical assets, right? If you get closer to the top of the bubble in the picture, those are the people who benefit most. And that is people who own precious metals mining stocks, for example. And at the very top of Delmar's bubble is, in fact, the precious metals themselves, gold and silver. So as the currency was debased, the people who would benefit greatly would be the ones that actually owned the hard money, the bullion, the gold and silver.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, Scott. As we're saying, just basically take a historical lens, and as Alexander Delmar wrote this stuff in the 1800s, he was able to see this coming, and we're in a way repeating the same process nowadays, right?
Yeah, there's a great expression, Tom, and that is the one thing that you learn from history is that you never learn anything from history, right? And it seems like we're just doing the same mistakes over and over and over again, and we don't learn from them. But that's not to say that individuals can't learn, right? And that's really the purpose of our website, is to allow as many individuals as we can to study this information, make their own decisions, and then, you know, perhaps lead other people to this trough and see if they might reconsider what they think money is.
Absolutely. And as you're speaking about, you know, trying to provide valuable information on the site, going through the site, I found a couple articles that I would like to get your thoughts on. So obviously, a lot of us know that JP Morgan was recently fined around $1 billion. So what does this mean for the silver price? And does this have any meaningful consequences to the quote unquote manipulation that is rife within this market? You know, it's all cool and good that they're going to pay a fine, but what is the actual implications on the market going forward if they're, you know, not allowed to trade it, anything like that? We've seen Scotiabank close down their precious metals division, but if JP Morgan makes, you know, $20 billion manipulating the market, and they have to pay a $1 billion fine, but they continue to be able to play the same game that they have been, that doesn't seem like there's any real consequence or anything meaningful to the market, right?
Yeah, well, I'll answer your first question first, and that is to say that what does this mean for the silver price? Right now, it seems to have not meant very much, obviously. So the silver price has gone up perhaps a little bit, but you know, these investigations have been going on for a very long time now. And you know, it's interesting that the silver price hasn't gone up more, considering that JP Morgan has agreed to pay this fine. You know, whether or not that means that they're admitting that this took place, you know, that's another subject. But in terms of, you know, what this means for the future, one thing I would say is that fining JP Morgan $1 billion is like fining a donut store a dozen donuts, right? You know, because they basically create money. So it doesn't really have much of an effect. And so we see these sort of phony slaps on the wrist of these financial institutions all the time for these kinds of shenanigans that they pull. What does it really amount to? Well, I think that there is some consequences to this, and that is to say that it shines a light on what's really going on behind the scenes. Because now, you know, that for a very long time, we've been under this impression that this manipulation question was a debate, right? You know, and there's two sides to the debate, one side that says that there's no manipulation, the other side that says that, yes, there's absolutely clearly manipulation and there's different kinds of it, we might add. But this really sort of ends that argument, I think, and it seems pretty clear that there has been manipulation. And I think that fine is essentially indicative of that.
So when we're speaking about that, Scott, does it not seem that there's, I mean, obviously it's showing that the price discovery of the metals has been stifled and not organically been allowed to find the intrinsic value of the price of these metals. But going forward, they're basically still allowed to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's a lot going on here. So there's the spoofing allegation, right? And then there's the naked shorting allegation in order to control the price of the silver market. And so, you know, this information that we received of the fine on JP Morgan pertained to the spoofing allegation. So what that means is that the debate on the naked shorting is still an ongoing debate. That door hasn't been closed. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see whether there will be any continued investigations into that.
Interesting. So Scott, Mike Maloney, obviously he's a very well-known figure in the silver and gold space, and he says that he owns 500 ounces of silver to every ounce of gold that he owns. So I wanted to get your thoughts on why you think that silver is so undervalued versus gold, and is this just based on the historical gold to silver ratio?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Mike Maloney, he's a very interesting guy, of course, and it seems obvious when he uses those numbers that he favors one over the other, right? But one of the things that I would say is that the gold to silver ratio is a really interesting historical phenomenon that you can use to sort of analyze and base your interpretation of what the value of silver should be relative to gold. And so I think when you look back at the long span of history, you find that the gold to silver ratio has been typically between 1 to 10, 1 to 15, 1 to 20. Right? That is 1 ounce of gold to 20 ounces of silver, somewhere in that range for the span of about, you know, 2,500 years. And then over the past, let's say, 150 years, it's been essentially decoupled because of the demonetization of silver. And it's ranged from, you know, 1 to 20 to, what was it in March? Was it 1 to 126, which is just an incredible abnormality, historically speaking. So when you see those things as a historian, it makes you question, it makes you wonder, well, what's going on here? There's something not right about this. This tells us that this is an unusual phenomenon taking place in our current modern age. And then I think the ultimate question that historians would typically ask is, can this continue, or is it going to revert back to something that looks a lot more like the normal ratio. And so, you know, I think scholars would speculate that nothing like this can last when it's been so out of whack for so long, and that eventually there has to be a reckoning, that the forces of history will catch up to the gold and silver ratio, and that silver should become more valuable relative to gold in the foreseeable future.
So as we think about silver really becoming more valuable in this foreseeable future, there's another article on the site that talks about loading up before QE monetization returns. So what could we see coming into this election? Obviously, this is going to be a very pivotal point in America, right? And the markets don't like the uncertainty of that. So is there any historical precedent for precious metals markets ahead of elections?
Well, I think that precious metals have historically always reacted in times of uncertainty and chaos. And certainly, I think almost everyone would agree. I don't think there would be too many people that would disagree that we're living in a very delicate situation, delicate period of time where there is a lot of uncertainty and there is a lot of chaos going on, not just in the United States, of course, but around the world. And so, yeah, I think that there's a strong possibility that this may resurface, and that because of this chaos that we're currently seeing, we may see higher gold and silver prices in the near term, as the election is only a month away. It's hard to believe.
Absolutely. I think there's going to be a lot of people that want to put this time of uncertainty and the election maybe 3 months behind them. It's going to be, a wild ride coming into it. But why would we want to load up on precious metals before the monetization or the next stimulus bill returns?
Right. And, you know, to point out the stimulus bill, one of the reasons why people hold precious metals, of course, and they have historically, especially in times of uncertainty, is because during these times, governments may be forced to spend more money, right? And we've already seen trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars being spent by the U.S. government this year. So we know that there's a lot of uncertainty, and that the narrative right now, politically speaking, is that the economy is basically hinging on the dispense of stimulus checks to Americans to stimulate the economy, to keep them from losing their businesses and their homes and so forth. And so if that's the case, if we are going to have more stimulus checks in the future, and that looks like both parties agree to that idea, maybe not necessarily the numbers, this would, by very definition, be an inflationary phenomenon, right? Because we're talking about more money printing, and that's what inflation is. Inflation is not rising prices. Inflation is money printing. And so if that's going to be the case, and perhaps with all of these calls for universal basic income and so forth, we might see a lot of stimulus checks in the future. It might not just be one and done. It might be something that takes place or every 2 weeks. And so if that's the case, you know, the money in your bank account is going to become worth less, right? And so that is one reason why you want to hold precious metals. That is to say that the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, they cannot print gold and silver. You know, it's impossible. They can't do it. So that means that hard assets, tangible assets, should be worth more in the future if there is a lot more money printing.
Interesting, Scott. Is there any other thoughts you'd like to add as we wrap up here?
I guess one thing I would say is, you know, if anyone is interested in silver in particular, I run a silver website called the Silver Independent. And one of the reasons why I created this website was because, as many of your viewers probably understand, it's actually quite hard to find information about gold and silver on the internet. And so if you want to track your silver investment, you basically have to go to all of these different news websites to find any information about it. So what I've tried to do is to aggregate that information from all of these different sources that I've come across on the internet and compile them into one place for silver investors. So if you're interested in the silver market, we've got a lot of information on our site, and we post some very interesting things. So for example, one of the things that we posted recently is stories about local coin shops, you know, and this is something that you don't see in the mainstream media. But I think it's important to pay attention to what's going on to these local coin shops, because that's going to give us an indication of, you know, who's buying precious metals and where it's going. And we've also posted an article recently of the story of a lost treasure in Roswell, New Mexico. Somebody buried treasure supposedly in Roswell. So we've got some really fun stuff on there, and it's been a blast creating the site and interacting with our visitors.
Absolutely, Scott. And I think the Silver Independent is a great resource. Obviously, at the silverindependent.com, you've got a couple different sections there: education, books, and of course the blog, as you say, where you post all of these pertinent articles to the precious metals industry. Your Twitter feed is also the Silver In-Depth 1. Anywhere else you'd like people to find you?
We're also on Instagram as well, but those are essentially the three places: the website, Twitter, and Instagram.
Excellent, Scott. Thanks very much for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?